by Satanic International Network. You're listening to The Ooze.
Upon the cave, every foul wicked spirit in the host, The Ooze.
20 minutes, that door of the day, on The Ooze, spread out.
On The Ooze, it's gonna fucking rock. Be there.
The whole point.
To really tap into adversarial time
necessitates a certain fortitude.
Now onto our show. Thanks for tuning in. I'm TC Downey, and with me on the air is my co-host Andre. Dan, how you doing today, man?
I could not be better, my friend. How are you doing?
I'm doing excellently. I'm happy this whole fucking 4th of July bullshit's done and over with, man. It's just been really cramping my fucking style.
Bringing explosive things to the world could be a worse thing you could be doing. Yeah, could be worse things.
Well, the thing of it is that drones of morons tracked to the business at the last, like, 2 weeks of it. It's like, anybody with any common sense came and bought their shit way ahead of time. And the thing that worries me is not necessarily that they'll hurt themselves with it as much as it is that they might actually hurt other people with this shit. So,
well, guaranteed that a lot of that shit's going to be used to hurt other people. I mean, hell, have you ever had a bottle rocket war or like a Roman candle war? That's what stupid kids do.
Yeah, yeah, I agree with that entirely, man. I'm just not so... Not so sure I'm willing to, deal with the shit in another 10 years or so. So I guess we'll just see what's going on, man. But it's just been one more NX season after another this year.
Yeah, dude. I guess this is like your Christmas, right? 4th of July.
Yep. We did roughly about $1 million worth of business in less than a month's time. Fucking limp tired from working 8 a.m. to 1 a.m. most of the time, and dealing with a ration of shit on the corporate level that I don't think anybody who actually does a decent job should have to do with. But I understand that, you know, after so many years, companies need to let people go and hire people for cheaper so that they can, well, you know, keep all their money.
Yeah, that is the essence of how the capitalist system works, my friend. It's dog eat dog out there.
Yeah, that it is. So the problem is they're trying to bite this wolf, and I ain't no regular dog. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, that's just it, right? You know, if you've got the goods to hold your position or advance it, then do it, you know. Obviously you do. You know, you're not another one of these fucking little pussified fucking whatever, you know what I'm saying?
I do. And I guess speaking on the note of pussified, I should make mention of something that I did observe during my my stay away from the internet for the most part due to, you know, being really fucking busy. A certain clown, and I'm not going to name any names because with a little bit of effort and a little bit of thinking, you'll be able to figure this out for yourself. It ran around for about a week making claims that yesterday's The Fallen show was somehow credited to him as being the...
What?
Yeah. So somehow he was the originator of the topic. It was his brainchild, the herd versus pack mentality thing. But what I find is really funny, man...
People have been saying that shit since the 90s in Satanism. Like, come on now.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, you go on.
Well, I was just thinking the earliest mention of this conversation that I can remember on the internet was between a guy named Eric Goslin, another guy named Glenn Jones, and then another guy named Eric Schutz, actually, and it was in the United Order of Cerberus. That they were discussing the herd versus pack mentality.
There ain't nothing new under the sun, my friend. I mean, as long as, you know, people have been making that metaphorical comparison of, you know, Satanists being wolves and Christians being sheep, I mean, obviously the pack versus herd or pack versus flock, you know, metaphor has also come up in the past. I mean, to say that, like, he somehow invented it and no one's, you know, used that before, and then to, like, turn around and point fingers at the girls of Fallen is beyond pathetic, dude. Seriously, that really happened.
Yeah, actually, I happened to catch it. You know Allison Jones, man. Well, she got into a debate with my old lady on Facebook over this whole Casey, whatever the fuck her last name is, deal. You know, and of course my girl pwned the shit out of her, but in order for me to follow the thread, I would have to go to one of the other's page to kind of see what was going on. So I happened to click on Allison's page, and this person had posted up the at that point what you might consider an announcement for the show, because the show itself hadn't aired yet. But underneath it, he said something about these people listening to him, or that he had these people's ear. And I just had to kind of chuckle, because this person also runs a kind of religious tolerance group, which is another bite directly off of the error that I'm talking about. That group, the United Order of Cerberus, was in fact a sort of a religious tolerance group. The idea was that, you know, you could remain an individual and yet still intercommunicate with other people of a left-hand path without it actually turning into a whole war. That was, you know, the premise behind the group. It obviously was a fail.
And we saw how that turned out, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Exactly. But see, this is the thing about this clown that's really pissing me off. He does little things like, put his pretty little soapbox up and stand out and scream at everybody else to get off of their soapboxes. And shit like, you know, this whole deal. I don't know, all around weaseling and trolling, and it's okay when he does it, but if somebody else is doing it, he's real quick to point the finger and scream hypocrite, you know?
See, that's really the problem with, how Satanism will manifest on the internet. Sure, there will be people that are really into this shit that will show up here and, you know, discuss things, but then there's people that sort of make this their identity, you know, but it's only online. And I try to distance myself from that nowadays, honestly. Like, I really don't care what people that obviously don't resonate with the same sorts of things that I do say or do. But I understand that, when he starts poking his finger over here or, you know, at the ooze, he can go fuck himself, because obviously he's full of shit.
Obviously. I just kind of had to throw that out there. It's not really so much anything more than just an aggravating factor. I'm myself becoming, you know, very ill-gutted towards sycophants, man. I just want to tell them, look, man, either fucking, you know, get with the program here or go hug a fucking tree. But, you know, the program here is not hugging trees.
Yeah.
So
picking up what you're putting down, brother.
Right. So tonight we're talking about Aeonic magic. Is that right?
Oh, shall we dig into the meat and potatoes?
We have
a caller, but I am not gonna let him on yet. It's not time.
No. Actually, the caller has requested that he be chastised and only be allowed to listen to the show rather than actually bring him on and, fuck with him a little bit there. We'll just say that right now he's delivering pizzas as we're, you know, actually putting in some intellectual heavy work, so.
Oh, right. He's listening on his little phone.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So, okay. It's kind of a mouthful, right, the topic, yeah. Aeonic magic and the left-hand path. I mean, what is aeonic magic really? It's really just like a fancy name for, you know, doing things that are intention to change the future in some way, you know, or to bring about the next aeon, you know, as in like to sort of change the core way that society operates. And it's not necessarily that it's going to happen or that, you know, that you think that you could actually do this, but it's just like the moving towards that end is what Aeonic Magic is, you know, doing what you can to change what is to come.
Right on. Well, from a fourth wave perspective, this is actually something that is referred to as influence. So it'll be interesting to see how things kind of line up here. Influences being things that are intentionally or unintentionally put into motion, which do actually alter in a change of perception, kind of making conscious ripples, if you will, in a much larger thing, which, well, I'm kind of spinning off on that. I've been checking out this series on TV lately called Wormhole. Have you seen this?
Wormhole? No, I don't think I don't watch a lot of TV, Beast, but tell me about it.
It's kind of a scientific look at some of these very topics that we've been tossing around for the past few years. Tonight, the one I was watching in particular was pointing very heavily towards the idea that there is a sixth sense that we actually possess. And that sixth sense is actually maybe our perception or our consciousness or maybe even to go further than that, an interactive kind of magnetism that works between the obvious Earth's magnetism and our own. But the ideas that are being expressed in it, and why I'm bringing this up, is because one of the things that they're figuring out is that people really can sense when somebody else is in the room. And this is an important thing in my mind, because when we come to realize that, we then learn that that space that's in between us is not necessarily occupied with an emptiness like we think it is, but rather that there is actually a magnetic field that's continuous flowing through us all. And they're kind of pointing fingers to this being how different ideas are spread. Like one particular experiment that they were talking about tonight, they took two people, they hooked them up to this little brain probe machine, and I guess there was a vast amount of distance between the two of them. They were isolated in rooms, lights were turned off, this frequency was cued, this certain magnetic frequency was cued, and then they began flashing lights on the left side of one of the two, whatever you want to call them, guinea pigs, and
subjects.
Yeah, that's the word. Yeah, and this light flashing actually cued in the mind of the other person the visual of light flashing. So the idea was actually moved through this magnetic field from one person to the other. Now, if you take this idea alone and you tie it in with the concept of the MEM, as we've been discussing for a long, long time, you kind of begin to realize that there's this other field working, and one that you could potentially actually gain some significant control over. So, wrapping that all back up to Aeonic Magic, yes, please.
Well, Beast, you know I'm a bit of a skeptic. I guess that would be a bit of an understatement to say I'm a bit of a skeptic. I'm quite the skeptic. And although those ideas sound quite interesting, the idea of a sixth sense or a way of knowing outside of our, you know, causal senses, it sounds quite appealing and interesting. And I really would like to see the research that you were looking at. That's it seems like the sort of claim that would require a lot of scientific evidence to really. I don't know, like, what sources do you have for that information?
Well, I mean, honestly, it was just the show that I watched, and I really can't say one way or the other, you know, the validity of the actual research being presented. But the fact that they're actually beginning to look at things like this and vector things in this manner, really, to me, is an interesting thing, because I think that there's so much more to human consciousness than maybe our overall, I don't know how you want to put it, our overall mind actually allows us to believe. So, you know.
Oh, well, absolutely. I think, you know, I would agree with you there. our science, although a lot of people sort of enshrine it as being like the ultimate quintessential science, is still it's a work in progress, you know. When I look at humans, I see an animal that's not really that far out of the caves. You know, the technology we'll have in 100 years, we'll be looking back the way that we're looking back at 100 years ago. You know, it'll be a significant difference. And the understandings they'll have of the human experience and the human brain at that point should, like, you know, dwarf ours. Like, look 100 years ago where medical science was at and compare it to now. You know, and those leaps should be tenfold because they're working with a greater technology base to expand it from. So yeah, I mean, I don't think we really know that much about how consciousness works either, Beast. And this is all quite interesting as speculation. But before it can become like actual theory, it needs more meat and potatoes, so to speak.
Yeah, I agree with that. Some of the data that was presented was convincing, but I also understand how the art of the spin doctor, so...
Yeah, a lot of what you see on TV is sensationalized. It's best to look to peer-reviewed scientific journals for the hard shit. But I'm not exactly sure how you were trying to tie that into aeonic magic as defined as, like, you know, doing things to change the future or doing things that intentioned to change, you know, how people see things in the future, how people, you know, act or believe things in the future.
Well... Here's an example of something that I was actually trying to demonstrate might indicate that this process is actually happening. Whenever a riot actually starts, it always starts with a few insiders, quote unquote, and from there it actually becomes kind of like this feeding frenzy of looting and destruction and anarchy.
Mob mentality.
Yeah, and so in my mind, any kind of magic can only be as effective as the person wielding it or the tool that it's being wielded with. So this would be potentially a breakthrough tool if it could be harnessed and used.
Well, certainly, a breakthrough of that magnitude would change everything. If they could absolutely prove without a shadow of a doubt, and further be able to use that as technology, you know, some sort of sixth sense, some sort of outside of your senses way of knowing and learning things, the ramifications of that would be enormous. It would really send a ripple down right straight down the center of the way we live and the way we experience things and the way we believe things. And, pretty much everything. So, yeah, I agree that if, you know, that would definitely be a humongously powerful tool to use as the, vectored towards changing or bringing about a new aeon or bringing an end to this one.
To me, I don't even need to have any kind of concrete proof on one end of it. Just the suggestion that it's too coincidental that we have the ability to develop a mob mentality gives me the idea that, you know, should I set out with a particular, quest in mind or end game in mind, that with the right amount of cultivation, I could actually not only achieve it myself, but simultaneously kind of kickstart other folks who are maybe tuned in with me to doing the same kind of thing.
Yeah, that you just described the whole function and purpose of the ONA right there. People that have the same sort of interests and the same sort of feeling that something isn't right and willingness to do something about it, sort of banding together under a common sort of banner, you know, as a collective sort of leaderless mob working towards similar ends. Yeah, right there, you just described it. That's exactly what you just described.
Right on. So now you see how it wraps back around into the idea of aeonic magic, because, I mean, obviously this is possibly the root motivator for the discussion is your current investment in the ONA.
Yeah, well, that would be definitely a faster route of, you know, being able to sort of get people to empathize with what it is that you're saying, if you could just sort of have them feel it without having to use words to describe it. But I'm not sure how exactly you would you'd be able to focus or harness this technology? Some sort of headband?
Well, I mean, here's a few things. Now, I've dabbled in some pseudosciences or pseudopsychologies, whatever you want to call them, just to kind of parse out potentiality in these fields. One of them is hypnotism. I'm slightly familiar with hypnotism, and there is... I believe there is a thing called the power of suggestion, and I think that it's pretty easy to demonstrate. You know, you don't have to actually speak words or even kind of, present any kind of coherent expression for somebody to totally pick up what it is that you're putting down in front of them and run with it. So...
Certainly. Yeah, it all comes down to an understanding of human psychology and how the mind works, you know, and being able to capitalize on that. Like, you know, that street magic and shit like that. Like, you know, just it's little tricks based on, like, a knowledge of psychology.
Right. And so my idea here being that using these kind of techniques, and obviously there would have to be a lot of trial and error, because it's a field that few have ventured into and not very many are willing to really give up details of how it's done. But, you know, you could cultivate such a thing to be a very dangerous weapon, especially when you're talking about things like sickening the current system or breaking the current system, however you want to, you know, kind of put that out there.
Oh, certainly. There's as many approaches to that as there are people with creative minds. You know what I'm saying? It's really about the end game more than the method used to attain it. But really, though, when I talk about, you know, the value of doing these, you know, long-term deeds, it's not even really 100% for the goal itself, but more striving towards it for personal development. You know, it sort of gives you a direction under which you can develop your own personal system, rather than just, you know, have it focused on improving yourself. You can improve yourself through this vehicle, through this certain vector of, it's a symbiotic relationship between the microcosm and the macrocosm, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I tend to try to dance away from that kind of hermetic sound anymore. I don't know. There's just something very mundane about the ideas that the hermetics push forward that, I don't know, it kind of sickens me in a way.
What do you mean by hermetics exactly?
Well, people who might practice so-called alchemy or anything pushed forward by Hermes Trismegistus or whatever the fuck the dude's name was. I mean, at one point I was really interested in it, but then I came to realize that he represents things in a very poor fashion in his descriptions of them, like the as above, so below microcosm, macrocosm thing. I mean, to really break things down into their correct spheres, you have to understand that not only is there the inner layer and the outer layer, but there's the two layers between. The total encompassment of everything that is microcosmic can be one organism. And then there's another organism which lies exterior to it, which is its immediate interface with its environment. And then beyond that, you can look at that as being macrocosmic as the description. So you've already lost two of these fields of thinking that really need to be vectored whenever you're trying to examine something in that type of respect.
I'm picking up what you're putting down, but I'm using it more in a metaphorical sort of context, like the microcosm being your personal experience of things, and the macrocosm being the world as it is on the outside. I mean, you could substitute those words for different words, because I'm not using them in that sort of context that you're putting out there. You know, the microcosm is your personal, as we were talking earlier, like pathé mathos, your own personal journey, of the left-hand path. Through deeds and experiences and blah, 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 blah. But through doing those things, you can either do them for your own personal development to break those chains, you know, to break those the hold of the memetics that you've been bombarded with since you were a baby, if you know what I'm saying, like everything around you, not just religion, but society, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But to also to, you know, to vector that outward, just because, you know, as a citizen in this society, you are partially responsible for it. So to do what you can to bring it down is kind of a matter of personal responsibility if you look at it under that light. That's how I see it.
I have no disagreement with you there, man. Really, more or less, I was just talking about a little bit of fine-tunement with the analogy. I'm not really sure what way that I would break it down in the sense that you just kind of laid out there, but...
Well, you could say the subjective and the objective instead. That would be totally different words.
Yeah.
Still get the same point across.
And I think that those... maybe those particular spheres of reasoning are easier to blur the lines between the cosmoses that I was describing prior, you know, like the microcosm and then the total of all that is microcosmic can be, you know, subjective completely. An objective can be the immediate sphere around you and then the entirety of all things outside of you. And
everything that isn't your personal experience.
Right, it becomes an object at that point. So, yeah, I mean, I'm splitting hairs with terminology, but it seems like lately that's the way my mind has kind of been working. I'm furthering each category and developing as I see it to be more natural when I'm thinking about things. So,
yeah, man, I personally think that's a very important thing to do, you know. Language is a good tool to be able to communicate concepts, but it's also how we think, you know, and the further, you know, the more refined your language is, the way you think to yourself, the more refined your thoughts can become, you know, which is, it's good. It's good to you know, nitpick about language sometimes, even though it may seem pedantic, it's actually a good thing to do.
Right on. Well, I realize that we've kind of... swerved a little bit off of the main path here. I'm curious, did you have a particular interconnection between the left-hand path and Aeonic magic that you wanted to discuss?
Well, yeah, certainly. You know, doing left-hand path things, sinister deeds, going out there and living it and doing things that, you know, make you uncomfortable, that push your boundaries, just for the sake of, you know, walking the left-hand path and personal development is all well and good. But if you also feel that this thing that you're opposed to is, you know, is partially your fault, you know what I'm saying? It's partially your fault and you want to do something about it. So it sort of gives you a vector under which you can achieve that internal gnosis, you know, that knowing through experience, left-handed attainment. You know, as opposed to knowing by proxy or right-handed attainment through epistemology, blah, 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 blah. But I think that, you know, on that level, they're very symbiotic. And, you know, they're intimately connected. At least for me, they are, the way I see the world, you know. For me, it's not enough just to talk about being the adversary or write about it. It's, you know, manifesting as the adversary, doing something about it, at least, you know, on my own personal scale, in my own personal sphere, is very important to me.
Right on. Well, I mean, here's the thing. It should be important to you. I mean, if you really own all that you are, everything that can, you know, you consist of, if that is really yours and no one else rules over it, then you have no choice but to kind of take that kind of approach, I think is what it is, because you can no longer say, well, this isn't my problem.
Exactly. That's exactly what it is too. That's a very powerful meme that's used against you. Used against all of us. You know, the "I'm just doing my job" meme. The "it's not my personal problem, so it's not my problem." So that therefore it's nobody's problem. That's the problem with these top-down, like impersonal governing structures. You know, it's the same problem you have with public parks. Nobody owns them, so nobody wants to take care of them. You know, if that was personally owned by someone, it would be taken care of. It's the same thing with the ideas. You know.
Right on. See, it kind of points to something that I've always thought was intimately connected with the idea of an occultist of any kind, let alone one that practices the left-hand path. It speaks on volumes of a concept called craftsmanship, and taking pride in that craftsmanship. You know, all that you do, all that you think, all that you are, you know, all those things, if you take a certain level of pride in them, if you, you know, you diligently put your best efforts through them, you know, you come up with some stuff that is so much more than what you ever thought you could achieve.
Well, certainly. Yeah, I would agree with that.
Right on. So I think it's important for those of us that are walking, you know, the devil's path, so to speak, that we realize that we should become craftsmen of that path and craftsmen within our life. You know, often the term master is thrown out there, and I think that in refining language, using the term master or mastery in some ways has a pejorative stick to it, if you can agree with that. You know, there's a negative aspect to it.
What do you mean? Is in addressing other people as master? You know, the left-hand path?
Well, yeah, in that sense, but no, I meant more in, you know, the idea of self-mastery. Like, again, it's just submitting the self to another thing, and that self is, well, self, but is it self? I mean, is it self in the sense of your idealistic you, or is it self in the sense of what you think other people want, what other people want you to do? What self are you subordinating to?
Yeah, see, that's the difference between the, what I would say the causal and the acausal self. You know, the things that, the dispositions you were born with, the way you are, are very hard to separate from what you've learned at, you know, from that point. It's impossible to really separate the two. That's the whole point of breaking all these memes, you know, breaking the hold of all these of all this conditioning that's over you, so you can dig at it and see exactly what is under there. But ultimately, who you are is always going to be, you know, layered with, you know, layers and layers of ideas and memes and memories and experiences. So who you are is always really changing. And like you say, I agree that the term self-mastery is sort of self-defeating, because You can only ever master the self that you are right now. That doesn't mean the self that you're going to be in 10 minutes has been mastered. You know what I mean?
Certainly. And the thing of it is, if I can swing this back around to my point on this fourth way influence, that there's constantly a flux of influence in your being. No matter where you go, no matter what you do, you're always surrounded by things that have an immediate influence upon you. If you step outside and it's raining, you're going to get wet. You know, you might catch cold. Whatever it is, there's immediate causal effect happening.
Yeah, I mean, you're being flooded by, you know, gigabytes and gigabytes, terabytes. I don't even know what the data size would be of data from your senses into your brain every second. You know, and you're dealing with all that all the time, you know, so sorting out that data, truth from false, yada, yada, yada. And it's very hard, you know, there's always going to be bullshit that gets through, and it's always going to be a constant process to filter that shit out. I don't think you can ever really master the self. I think it's a lifelong journey. You can get closer to shedding yourself of all morals and all of this, but I don't think you can ever truly master it. You know, at least not in a human lifetime. And even then, you're still getting, unless you lock yourself in a room and never subject yourself to any more sense data and just try to sort it out all in your head, even then, you're not going to truly be able to master anything, because you can't experience anything, and that's how you really gain knowledge to begin with. So it's kind of a losing battle there.
Exactly. And I mean, even the absence of data in itself is an influence, if you can, just vector that into that as well. So it goes beyond even being influenced by all the sensory stuff that goes there, but it's even sometimes the lack of influence or a lack of something there that creates the influence. So the only choice I think that we have, and then I'm just going to talk from a personal level here, is to realize two things. The first of which is that you constantly can choose what is influencing you at that point, what you will allow to dominantly influence you at that point. And you do this in a couple of ways. You realize that there's that core essence, and then everything between that and what actually interacts with the outer world is a layer of personality that has been built there to filter your exchange through the what's in this empirical mean.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, like I said, that's the difference between, like, say, your mimetic self and your acausal self, or your all these different causal things that are influencing you, that you believe in, that make up your, that define your reality, that define your boundaries, that define your world. And it doesn't matter who you are, there's scores of them. You know, otherwise you'd just be an amorphous nothing. There's things that define you as you are, you know, beyond your core, you know, your core visceral instinctual self. And I don't know. I mean, trying to separate your core visceral instinctual, you know, acausal self from everything else seems like it would be a monumental task. I mean, how do you go about doing that?
Well, I don't think it's necessary to separate them. I think it's necessary to realize that you are responsible for developing both parts. Gurdjieff actually proposed that most adults have the essence of 12-year-old, that it's that undeveloped. It has literally reached a developmental arrest because your personality, the demand on your personality is so strong that it stops you from putting any effort further into developing the essence of you, which I think kind of ties real nicely to something you and I have been talking about a lot lately, and that is what is truly esoteric wisdom.
Yeah, well, I think esoteric wisdom is gained through practical experience, gnosis. Like, the word gnosis is thrown around a lot, but I just have to clarify, like, right now, for our listeners or anyone that might not know, is that gnosis is actually defined as knowledge through experience. Gnosis is left-hand path, left-hand attainment. You know, learning things through actually doing them, through experiencing them, rather than reading about them. That's what right-handed attainment is, you know. So, but anyway, I had a point before that. It's gone now. So where were we, Beast? I got that out anyway.
Yeah, that's at 11:37 my time. That's pretty damn good, man.
I may have had a few beers, Beast. I'm not going to lie to you.
That's all right, and Jason King gets away with it all the time. And I actually usually do it to Jason Sorrell, man. I'll fucking show up to the show hammered, and that's why Zach's always busting my chops about smoking another bowl.
Well, I'm not hammered, man, but I may have had a couple.
Right on.
I think it might have been the bowl I smoked that caused me to forget what I was talking about there, but I don't know. Anyway, there was something. You were talking about Gurdjieff.
Yeah, what I was getting to was that development of your essence only happens through the actual gaining of esoteric wisdom, or wisdom of how things work, by allowing the idea to actually move from within you through these layers of personality, or these layers of I don't know what you want to call it, tempering.
Absolutely, that is actually the point of autodiabolic method. This little project that I'm working on. It's you learn things through gnosis, through doing, but you still have to scrutinize them with your mind, and that's the whole point. You know, to put that data that you gather through the hottest possible fire, and then what you might get might approximate something close to the truth. You know what I'm saying?
Sure. Sure. Well, as close as I think is actually objectively possible. Definitely.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, we can never. We're limited by our five senses and randomly evolved senses. It's not like we can really experience much of the world as it is. You know, like you say, we can only experience the sort of macrocosm that our sense data generates for us. That's really science tells us is really nothing like the actuality of the world, but this is what we got, so we got to deal with it.
Right on. Well, and that's kind of the point of the esoteric wisdom thing, is that once you really put something through this process, this dealing with it, you come to a point where you really know something, and that's different than having knowledge of something.
Exactly. It sure is. That's the difference between the right hand and the left hand attainment right there again. You can read a book and you can have knowledge of something. You know everything about, say, taking apart and putting together a car. You've got all the documents. You know where all the parts go. You know how they're labeled. But until you actually do it, you know, you don't have knowledge. You don't really know it. You only have knowledge of it.
You know? Right. And that is... Well, that's the development of essence, at least as far as my understanding of it has come.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's the real shit right there, you know. People have become too focused on book learning and on, especially in the left-hand path, because left-hand path is supposed to be focused on, you know, gnosis through, you know, left-handed attainment, like getting out there and fucking doing shit, you know, sinister things, not even sinister things all the time, just things, like learning through doing. That's what left-handed is all about. But now we've got this sort of sad state of affairs where people just read the Satanic Bible, declare themselves a Satanist, and go about their lives as if they were nothing else had changed. And that's what people have come to know as Satanism, and it bothers me, to be honest. It really bothers me. It makes me a little ill.
And I'm right there with you, man. I'm green in the face as of lately, especially. I mean, like I said, just pointing to that one character I did earlier, it's just like a knee-jerk reaction to something that has really ultimately made me very sick.
Yeah, you know what? I like Ron, man, but I don't understand why the guy affiliates with Satanism. It doesn't make any sense to me. That's all I'll say about that. It doesn't. It's like, why do you choose this word of all words? Whatever.
Well, I think it's motive to actually realize that Satan has always been, to still an ONA term, Magian concept. You know, the devil, on the other hand, that's a whole different deal. That's something that has been inherent with us since the dawning of mankind.
Yeah, I agree. Dude, I agree to an extent. You know what? I'm not going to be one of those types that shits on LaVey, because I think LaVey had it right, man. I think LaVey had a lot of shit right. And I think that a lot of that shit died with LaVey, because a lot of people never got it, you know? You remember the Satanic Panic. I mean, you're old enough. We were both kids, but remember, like, before the Satanic Panic happened, Satanism was on the right track. It was an adversarial thing. It was moving against society, blah, 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 blah. It was actually... you know, a functional thing that could take on the name of Satan with pride. But then the Satanic Panic happened, and, you know, all of these zealots started pointing fingers at the Church of Satan. So he crumbled, and his administration crumbled, and they started, you know, putting in these rules to kowtow to this Magian pressure. And, you know, eventually you had this sort of whipped, like, oh, if you do anything illegal, you're not a Satanist. If you do any drugs, you're not a Satanist. If you do this, you're not a Satanist. Anything, all of these things, Satanists do not harm children. And I'm not saying I harm children, but I'm saying, you know, they threw all these things in there, all these rules to make the outside pressures happy. And it was really at that point that sort of Satanism died for all intents and purposes.
Oh, yeah, it choked every last breath out of it and killed off its offspring, too.
Yeah, I mean, at that point, what are you opposing? It's like, I have a homie over at 600 Club named Diavolo, and he uses the term house nigger, and it's a very good term. It's a very good term, house niggery. That's what modern Satanism has really become. You know, it sort of exists on the outskirts, but it sort of, you know, is like, please just let me live here. I'll be good. Just let me live here. I'll be good. You know, I won't hurt anybody. I'm just the black sheep. And to me, that's not Satanism, you know?
Right on. It's not even close. That's sycophantry. That's all it is.
Yeah. So
yeah, go ahead, man.
Yeah, okay, where were we, man? We kind of got sidetracked and diverted.
Aeonic magic. I mean, the interaction there, the interconnection between aeonic magic and the left-hand path is realizing that you, by choosing to walk your own path, have placed yourself at odds against something. And so, you know, it's kind of your responsibility to yourself to contribute whatever you can to taking down this thing that you've pledged yourself against.
Yeah. Okay. So that was a very good summary. And I should also throw in there that, you know, not all goals need to be reachable to be worthwhile, right? It's really the quest and the doing and the striving. It's the key to personal, you know, to gnosis. Like, say, like if you're going to start doing martial arts, you know, you have a goal to become a martial arts master, and that's what you work towards. And that's, you know, and through that vector is how you gain your martial arts skills. Even though you may never become a martial arts master, it's that goal, that end goal, you know, to be the best at something, to be the best chess player. Might you know, put you on a vector that'll make you very, very good at chess. You may never be the best chess player, but that vector still helped you. You know what I'm saying? That's what's behind the ONA Star Game too. You know, where they talk about, which is basically science fiction, man colonizing the stars. We realize that it's not, you know, it's not something that's probably going to happen, but it gives a vector, something to move towards. You know, the same with the aeonics of taking down the machine. You know, it builds solid individuals in the quest, even if the quest never comes to fruition. And that's really the point of what I was trying to get at with this whole topic. You know, long distance targets that will sharpen your aim in the short term. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Actually, right now in my mind, I kind of have a scene in the movie 300 where there's this wall of bodies that they've just chopped up, all these heads they've put out, and in the horizon you see this huge, just monolithic Persian army, you know, darkening the horizon towards them, and you know, they knew they were never walking out of that place alive again, but their greatest fear, warrior, whatever you want to call it, warrior tree, happened right then, when they realized, you know, that if they're going to go out, they might as well go out trying, and in the end they gain something from that.
Yeah, exactly. There's a million examples. You know, like just vectoring yourself towards something long term to achieve something short term. But if enough people were to do that towards the same goal, that long term thing may eventually get accomplished, you know. And that in and of itself is nothing to sneeze at. So that's where I'm at anyway with this whole Satanism thing, because for a tool of personal development, it's powerful. But you know, if you're gonna take the name of the devil, and you're gonna be one of the devil's own, but yet you're really just, you know, living the same life, doing the same things as everyone else, not actually actively opposing anything or doing anything in the real world, then it's hypocritical to even take the label at all. And, you know, so that's where I'm at with all this whole thing right now. It's a matter of action. It's a matter of deeds rather than words, you know?
Sure. Well, all it does is make you a angry mundane with a Satan t-shirt on. That's all it does.
Exactly. I mean, you know, I'm not going to say that I don't take part in the internet games, because I do. But for me, that's just fun, and it's also a matter of spreading memetics, getting the word out there, you know, finding maybe there's more people that think the same way that I do, that we do, you know, and sort of exposing them to you know, sort of pulling the wool off of their eyes, and, you know, they'll sometimes realize, you know, the shithole that we actually exist in, and a lot of these ideas that have been sort of cultivated to make us believe things in a certain way are utter fucking bullshit, you know. And that's just one more person that eventually, you know, it would reach critical mass if enough people act, and things could change. Then again, I realize that is a rampant form of idealism, and it is and it isn't, because I really don't think that this is going to come about within my lifetime. But as a vector to take, I think it's noble and I think it's honorable.
Right on. Absolutely. I think if you go out of this world with nothing else, your honor and your pride are, you know, the things that you want to make sure you take with you.
Yeah, honor is very important to me. It's really my core thing that, you know, guides my day-to-day activities. It always has been. I was just raised that way.
Right on. So, we can kind of break now from, you know, main topic. I think we gave it a good college try, and I think it came out nice. So.
Yeah, man. Yeah, I think so. So what do you want to talk about, Beast?
Well, I guess, throw a few things out there, because this 11 o'clock slot tonight is not intended to be a one-time thing. I'm looking at making this the permanent time slot for the Saturday's, you know, original ooze. The thing of it is that I'm a little kind of, I don't know, well, I guess we'll see next week, but I'd like to see a much bigger turnout, since all of the people of the West Coast were so vocal about actually wanting to be able to listen to the show live and participate in it.
Here's the thing, man. We didn't really advertise this time change. And most of our hits do come from the archives. So I think that the fact that we are now mentioning that the show is going to be at 8 o'clock Pacific time in the evenings on Saturdays, and whatever that translates into, wherever the hell you are, people will realize that. And I'm sure we'll have more people tuning in live next week that'll be aware. You know, all those people that don't get up early on Saturday mornings. On the West Coast.
Yeah. Right on. Shame on you, fuckers. Shame on you. You know, Ben Franklin used to say, early to bed, early to rise makes a man healthy, wealthy, and wise.
Yeah. I suppose that's one of the better truisms.
Right on. I happen to be a fan of any Revolutionary War literature that I can get my hands on. I've read, I think, just about everything Thomas Paine's ever written. Pretty big fan of his book, The Age of Reason. I don't know if you actually have had the chance to read it, but if you haven't, take a look at it. You'll see something like a distorted mirror's reflection of conversations that you pick up on today.
Oh, I bet. You know, like I say, there's nothing new under the sun. Honestly, I haven't read that much classical philosophy. I've read some Wittgenstein. I've read some Nietzsche. I've read some Schopenhauer. I've read some, you know, Albert Camus. And a little bit of Sartre. But really, you know, that's just a drop in the bucket. And even that, I haven't read that much. It's not like I've read any of their complete works or anything. So, But no, I haven't read that particular one. No, so.
Right. If you're ever bored, take a stroll through it. I personally think that his delivery is amusing. He actually has a sense of humor, and it kind of plays out as he's writing.
Yeah, well, I'll definitely put that on my to-read list, my friend.
Right on. So next thing I wanted to kind of throw out there, I haven't had a chance to tune into the Fallen. So I'm kind of curious if anybody would offer some feedback as to how the show's going. It's reached its, what, third episode at this point?
I haven't actually had a chance to listen to this week's episode, Beast. So I couldn't tell you, but, you know, if somebody wants to call in and discuss that for the next, what do we got, 6 minutes? We could do that.
Right on.
Anybody?
The next thing that I kind of wanted to pop up here, because I do have actually a list of things, I wanted to make mention that I want to take this particular version of the ooze and I want to really put razor sharp edge on it. So in my mind, I'm kind of looking for topics that are similar to what we've talked about today, but I want people to understand that there may very well be a mimetic agenda in this show, this edition, from here on out.
Yeah, that would be a fair assessment. I mean, I'm not going to pretend like everyone has an agenda, Beast. And as you know, an associate of the ONA, I have the ONA's interests in mind. So, but that doesn't mean I'm trying to convince anyone of anything. I'm just trying to, you know, see if the right people are listening. And every now and then, the right people will listen. that's really all I'm after.
Right on. And that's, I guess, why I'm making the point of actually, you know, throwing this out here, because I want people to understand that they're really going to be walking into heavily biased information at this point. And I would encourage everybody to, you know, the time to actually do the research yourself, or if you have a variance of opinion, please call in. So,
well, I don't think I'm well, everybody's biased, I suppose, but I always try to present things the way I see them. And I really am not trying, like I say, convince anyone of anything. I'm not trying to present a, you know, I'm not trying to be a politician or anything.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. And to be honest with you, I'm not finger pointing you. I'm actually finger pointing me. So.
Oh, fair enough then, man. That's fine.
What happened was, this past couple of weeks, I had this idea, and it just seemed silly at the time, but for whatever reason, it lingered. My idea was that I would see the Ooze develop to its year two anniversary, and then I would offer it up for sale for $666.
Okay.
So, amusing by itself, but then I got to thinking about it. Well, if I can't actually sell the show, and it's not really making me any money, then, what exactly, other than getting to talk at a few dozen, you know, good people, is the benefit? What's the juice? You know, what am I squeezing? So I've decided that I'm going to kind of try to focus it more towards putting out a more personalized message.
Yeah, that's all. There you go, man. That's just it, right? What you have here is a platform from which to launch ideas. And that's really its most important factor. That's how I see it anyway. I mean, you know, that's how I'm playing it.
Right on. So with all that being thrown out there, I guess I've pretty much covered any announcements that I had to make. Anything going on in the wonderful world of ONA that you maybe want to, you know, put in these last 2 minutes?
No, not really. Just sort of business as usual. I really have run out of material, my friend.
Really?
And by material, I mean beer. I really need to go to the fridge to get another one.
Right on. Right on. Well, real quick, what is it? Is it autodiabolic.wordpress.com that people can follow you on?
Ah, yes, that's my blog. That's my my Autodiabolic Method blog. Every time I write something new, that's where you'll find it. It's at autodiabolic.wordpress.com. Feel free to go check it out. I don't know, there's only like nine or ten articles there now, but there will be more as time goes on.
All well written, too. Well, Dan, go ahead and go get your beer, and I'll take the show out, and I'll meet you back at Sinchat.
Sounds good. Thanks for tuning in, people. I'm out. Dan Dredd, out.
All right, folks, don't forget to tune in tomorrow night as me and Jason Sorrell talk about, well, whatever he scheduled with Lexi to actually talk about. So, again, same bat time, same bat channel. That's it. We're gonna go ahead and roll the intro or outro. Yeah, intro, outro.
Thank you for listening to the Ooze. Opinions expressed by our guests or callers do not necessarily represent the opinions held by TC, Zach, Jason, Matt, or any other institution represented by them. If you have been offended by the production of this show, we are sorry, but as the old expression goes, tough luck. Special thanks to Dr. Rocky DeRoma for his contribution to this outro. The Ooze is a Creative Oddity Studios product and is presented by Titanic International Network as its official blog talk radio show. Why waste your time with those other guys?
fucking listening to this shit already?